We traced a thread through. Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Thanks for listening. And don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app. Imagine, if you will, that it is 5,000 years ago.
Right. A very busy time in human history.
Exactly. Across the globe, human populations are just absolutely booming. I mean, we've had the dawn of agriculture. You know, we're farming, we're herding, we're building these unprecedentedly large settlements.
Yeah, the total number of humans on Earth is really just skyrocketing at this point.
But, and here's the catch, if you look strictly at the male genetics from that exact same time period, it looks as though humanity like nearly went extinct.
It truly is. It's one of the most baffling, counterintuitive paradoxes in our entire genetic history.
Right. Because if you trace the maternal line, you know, using mitochondrial DNA, you see this steady, healthy population growth reflecting that agricultural boom.
Exactly. The female lines look great.
But if you look at the paternal line, the Y chromosome, there's this massive sudden crash. The data actually suggests that for every 17 women passing on their mitochondrial DNA to the next generation, only one man was passing on his Y chromosome.
Wow.
Yeah.
17 to 1.
Right. The male effective population size just plummeted, basically leaving a permanent glaring scar on our genetic record.
So how did this massive Y chromosome bottleneck happen? You know, was it the result of some global apocalyptic war where men just relentlessly wiped each other out across continents?
The classic theory, yeah.
Or is there a surprisingly peaceful explanation hidden in how ancient humans actually organized their families? Okay, let's unpack this.
I love that setup because that is the exact mystery we're tackling today in this deep dive. We're looking at a really fascinating piece of research that it just flips the conventional wisdom about this bottleneck completely upside down.
It really does. And before we dive into the deep end, today we celebrate the work of the eco-anthropology team at the Muséum National d'Histoire Naturelle, the CNRS, and Université Paris-Cité, who have really advanced our understanding of how ancient social structures shaped human genetic diversity.
Yeah, their work is basically the engine for our entire discussion today. It really is a brilliant synthesis of anthropology and genomics.
Definitely.
To understand the scientific problem they addressed, we really have to look closely at what we call the post-Neolithic Y chromosome bottleneck.
Right.
Depending on the region of the world, this genetic crash happened roughly between like 3,000, 5,000 years ago.
So it wasn't exactly at the same time everywhere?
No, exactly. In the Near East, for example, it peaks around 8,300 years before present. But in Europe, it hits its lowest point a bit later, closer to 5,000 years ago.
Okay, got it. And just to be completely clear for you listening, when we say bottleneck, we do not mean the total census population of men on Earth dropped to just a few individuals.
Right. Right, right. That's a very common misconception.
We're talking about effective population size,
yeah,
which, you know, basically means the number of men who successfully pass their genes forward in an unbroken chain to the present day.
That distinction is so crucial. There were millions of men alive, you know, walking around, farming, building societies, but only a microscopic fraction of their specific Y chromosome lineages survived to be passed down to us.
Yeah.
The vast majority of male bloodlines just abruptly dead-ended.
And for a long time, the leading theory to explain this was, incredibly dark.
Very dark.
It was famously proposed by a researcher named Zeng and their colleagues, and it argued that this bottleneck was caused by brutal, violent competition between patrilineal kin groups.
Right. The theory was basically that clans of related men fought so intensely and so viciously that entire male bloodlines were repeatedly driven to physical extinction.
I mean, the idea was straightforward in a grim way, right? Related men band together, wage war on a neighboring group, and literally wipe out all the men in that rival group.
Exactly. And because those rival men all shared a very similar Y chromosome from a common ancestor, that entire genetic branch is suddenly pruned from the human family tree by the sword.
See, I have always struggled with that explanation, honestly.
Ah, really? How so?
Well, if we really think about the logistics of early agrarian societies, it just doesn't hold up. To make the math of that violent model work, the previous researchers assumed 15% of all males were killed in every single generation.
15%? That's a massive number.
Right. I mean, think about what 15% actually looks like for a farming village. If you are constantly losing that many working-age men to warfare, whose is planting the wheat?
Who's tending the herds?
Exactly. You can't survive a harsh winter or a bad harvest if you are perpetually hemorrhaging your workforce. It sounds like demographic suicide, not a sustainable way of life.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, your skepticism hits right at the heart of a massive, long-standing philosophical debate in anthropology. It is essentially the Rousseauians versus the Hobbesians.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Rousseau famously viewed ancient humans as fundamentally peaceful, only corrupted later by civilization. While Hobbes, on the other hand, assumed life in the state of nature was brutal, nasty, short, and characterized by constant warfare.
Right. But when archaeologists actually dig up the bones from this era, what do they find? Like, does the evidence actually support that level of constant global slaughter?
Well, that's the thing. The archaeological evidence for violence in this specific era is highly inconsistent, which is exactly the problem with the violent model.
Okay.
Some local studies do show a spike in violence, sure. But broader surveys show that violence levels remained pretty stable from the time Homo sapiens diverged from other primates all the way until the Iron Age.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, we find graves with weapons, absolutely, but archaeologists are quick to point out that the idealization of the warrior as a social status doesn't necessarily mean there was an actual intensification of global warfare.
Hmm?
So, you know, relying on a global apocalyptic war to explain a worldwide genetic crash is highly problematic.
Here's where it gets really interesting. The researchers behind today's deep dive proposed an alternative, completely peaceful hypothesis.
Yes, a totally different paradigm.
They asked this brilliant question. What if the global shift to agropastoralism, meaning, you know, the rise of farming and herding, fundamentally changed human kinship rules in a way that accidentally destroyed genetic diversity?
Precisely. They hypothesized that cultural rules regarding where you live, who inherits your property, and how you trace your descent can leave a profound signature on our genetics.
And all without a single drop of blood being spilled.
Exactly.
To test this, they used a methodology that is just fascinating. So for you listening, let's imagine this together. Think of it like running a massive multi-generational simulation in a video game, like The Sims.
I love that analogy.
Right. But instead of building houses and swimming pools, you are tracking genetic drift over tens of thousands of years.
That is a perfect way to visualize it. They used a sophisticated forward genetic simulation software. Specifically, it was called SLIM version 4.1. And they started by building a virtual world with a panmictic population, which that just means everyone mates randomly.
Right, no strict social rules yet.
Exactly, a population of 1,500 individuals. They let this simulation run for 20,000 generations just to establish a stable, healthy baseline of genetic diversity.
Gotcha.
In this virtual world, they specifically tracked a large 1 megabase segment of the Y chromosome and a 10 kilobase segment of mitochondrial DNA.
So they have this healthy baseline Sims world, right? And then, 100 generations before the present, they essentially hit a button to simulate the dawn of agriculture.
Yep, the agricultural revolution begins.
They break the population into 5 distinct virtual villages, and they start changing the rules of the game. So let's walk through the cultural variables they introduced, because this is where the genius of the study really lies.
Okay, so the first rule they applied to their virtual world was petrilocality. Right. This is a residence rule where women migrate to their husband's village upon marriage. So the men stay put in their home village and the women move.
Which makes total sense biologically, right? If women are always moving between villages to marry, the mitochondrial DNA, the female line, is constantly mixing and sharing diversity across the whole map.
Exactly. It keeps the maternal diversity really high.
But the Y chromosomes get locked into specific geographic areas. The men stay home, so their genetics stay home.
That sets the stage perfectly. So the second rule they layered in was patrilineality. This simply means descent and inheritance are strictly tracked through the father.
Okay, so children belong to their father's descent group or clan.
Exactly. Which brings us to the third variable, and this is the one that really, it really blew my mind. Variance in reproductive success.
Oh yeah, the wealth factor.
Right. In a hunter-gatherer society, nobody really owns much, so everyone has roughly similar chances of raising kids. But with agriculture, for the first time in human history, you can accumulate wealth. You can own a herd of cattle or a massive plot of fertile land.
And that wealth translates directly to biology. I mean, if you are a wealthy man in this society, you can afford more resources, you might pay higher bride prices, and crucially, your children survive at much higher rates.
Yes. And because of the patrilineality we just mentioned, that wealth and status are inherited by your sons. So the reproductive success basically compounds over generations. The rich get richer, and they have more surviving kids.
And that leads to the final variable they plugged in, right?
Fission. Fission. Because eventually, a wealthy, successful village gets too big. The land just can't support them all.
Like a startup getting too big and spinning off a new company, the village has to split. But like, how they split is everything, right?
That is the absolute linchpin of the whole simulation. The researchers tested two ways of splitting. The first was random fission, where a random assortment of villagers pack up and leave to start a new town.
Okay, sure.
But the second, much more impactful method was lineal fission. In lineal fission, the split happens strictly along family lines. Closely related male, say a powerful patriarch, his sons and his nephews take their shared wealth, stick together, and form the new group.
Leaving the others behind.
Right, separating from their more distant, perhaps poorer cousins.
Which again is completely logical. I mean, if I am leaving to start a new farming settlement, I am not taking random strangers. I am taking my brothers and my closest relatives with me.
Absolutely.
So we have our virtual agrarian world set up. We have patrilocality keeping men in place. We have wealth passing down from father to son. We have the rich getting richer in terms of surviving kids. And we have groups splitting up along strict family lines.
The perfect storm.
Exactly. When they hit play on the simulation, what actually happened?
The data from the simulations is absolutely stunning. When the model combined that lineal fission with the wealth-driven variance and reproductive success, the male genetic diversity absolutely crashed. It matched the real-world historical bottleneck data perfectly. And the most remarkable part, this happened without a single violent death programmed into that specific simulation.
I really want to pause on this because it is so counterintuitive. A 29-to-1 crash in male diversity, purely through peaceful cultural rules.
It's incredible.
Let's break down exactly how that invisible force works, because it can be, you know, hard to wrap your head around. Let's imagine two neighboring farms over a few hundred years. We'll call them Farm A and Farm B.
Let's do it. So Farm A is highly successful. They have great land, a massive herd, and lots of accumulated wealth. Because of that wealth, the patriarch of Farm A has five sons who all survive to adulthood.
Okay, well, Farm B, right next door, struggles. Bad soil, no herd. That patriarch only has one son who survives.
Okay, fast forward a generation. The five sons of Farm A inherit that wealth, and each of them has five surviving sons. Now you have 25 men carrying Farm A's Y chromosome.
But Farm B's lone son struggles, and maybe just due to bad luck or illness, he has no sons, only daughters.
And right there, Farm B's Y chromosome vanishes from the earth forever.
Just like that.
Just like that. But it gets even more dramatic. Farm A is now too crowded with its 25 men. So they practice that lineal fission we talked about. 10 of those closely related cousins pack up half the herd and start Farm C down the river.
So now we have Farm A and Farm C, both expanding, both highly successful, and both entirely populated by men carrying the exact same Y chromosome.
Yes.
If you zoom out and let that run for thousands of years, it is like a compounding interest account for genetics, right? The successful lines multiply exponentially and colonize new areas together, while the poorer lines just quietly flicker out of existence.
No one was murdered. Farm B just couldn't compete economically.
Wow.
What's really fascinating here is that we see this pattern globally in the historical record, which really grounds these statistics. There's a famous example from Northwest Ireland cited by the researchers. Yeah. Geneticists found that roughly 1 in 5 men in that region today descends from a single, powerful, early medieval dynasty known as the Uí Néill. One family line just completely dominated the gene pool.
1 in 5. That is wild.
It is. The paper also notes high-status Chinese imperial lineages from the 18th and 19th centuries. The high-status lineages grew rapidly, spreading their specific Y chromosome far and wide, while the lower-status groups simply faded out over time. The cultural transmission of success is incredibly potent.
You mentioned earlier that the simulation created a 29-to-1 ratio. Like, for every 29 women, only one man passed on his genes.
Yeah, and the most highly structured models.
That is even higher than the 17-to-1 ratio observed in the real-world data. How did the researchers verify that their simulated crash accurately matched the complex genetic patterns we see in modern DNA?
Right, so to ensure their virtual world accurately reflected reality, they analyzed the simulated DNA using two very different analytical lenses. One method essentially takes a snapshot of the genetics.
A snapshot, okay.
Right. It looks at the average number of genetic differences present in the population right now to see recent, fast-reacting demographic shifts. This is using something called pi-based nucleotide diversity.
So that's the short-term view.
Exactly. The other method acts more like a deep-time telescope. It builds a complex statistical model from the ground up, inferring massive historical population changes over tens of thousands of years.
Which I think was the BEAST, coalescent-based Bayesian skyline plots.
You got it.
So they're using two completely different ways of measuring the exact same phenomenon to see if they agree.
And they did, perfectly. Even when comparing these wildly different techniques, the conclusion was inescapable. These structural cultural rules destroyed Y chromosome diversity far more effectively and thoroughly than violence alone ever could.
Now, I have to ask a question that I'm sure is on the listener's mind. Whenever we talk about one man having a disproportionate number of descendants, my mind immediately goes to polygamy.
Oh, sure.
Like, if one wealthy man has 10 wives, obviously his Y chromosome going to dominate the next generation.
Yeah.
Could just having multiple wives, you know, polygyny, cause this entire global bottleneck all by itself?
It is a great question, and it's a very common assumption in this field. The researchers actually tested it directly in their simulation.
Oh, they did?
Yeah. They modeled a hyper-polygynous society based on real-world data from the Kipsigis people of Kenya, which is historically one of the most polygynous societies in the world. In that model, some wealthy men had up to 12 wives.
And what did the simulation show? Did it crash the diversity like we see in the bottleneck?
It reduced diversity, yes, but it wasn't even close to being enough to account for the massive global bottleneck. The male effective population size only reduced by a factor of about 4 in the hyperpolygyny model.
Wow, so a 4-to-1 drop, not a 29-to-1 drop.
Right. To get the massive, catastrophic crash we see in the historical record, polygyny simply isn't enough. You really need that lineal fission. You need entire groups of related men outcompeting other groups, consolidating their wealth, and physically splitting along paternal lines over centuries.
So what does this all mean? We have this elegant, mathematically sound, entirely peaceful model that perfectly predicts one of the biggest genetic mysteries in human history. How does this reshape our understanding of ourselves?
Well, it fundamentally suggests that the invention of property, specifically the accumulation of movable wealth during the rise of agriculture, rewrote human reproduction. There is a famous anthropological saying by David Aberle that the authors reference, "The cow is the enemy of matriliny."
The cow is the enemy of matriliny.
Yeah.
I absolutely love that quote. We really have to dwell on that for a second because it perfectly captures the psychological shift.
It does.
I mean, before agriculture, you couldn't really hoard wealth. If you kill a mammoth, you have to share it or it rots. You can't pass a rotting mammoth down to your grandson.
But a cow, a herd of cows reproduces. It grows. It is wealth that can be hoarded, guarded, and inherited.
Right. And once you have cows, once you have lasting, movable wealth, men suddenly have the economic power to resist older, perhaps more egalitarian or matrilineal traditions.
Exactly. They can afford to pay high bride prices to bring women to their villages, and they can keep their sons at home to work the expanded herds. The invention of the cow literally rewired the human family tree. It really did. Wealthy families consolidated power. When they got too big, they split off into those highly related subgroups we talked about. And when poorer lineages died out purely by chance or a lack of resources, their unique Y chromosomes vanished forever.
It's just wild to think about.
Yeah, this genetic bottleneck is not a record of a global war. It is essentially a biological readout of ancient wealth inequality.
But as with all incredible scientific models, there is a fascinating limitation to this simulation that the authors point out. When they ran the model, the genetic crash happened really fast, almost too fast, actually, to perfectly align with the historical timeline if these rules were permanent.
Right. This raises an important question about social evolution. For the bottleneck to peak exactly when it did, around 3,000 to 5,000 years ago, depending on the region, and then subsequently recover, ancient societies couldn't have maintained these strict, rigid rules forever.
Right, because if they had kept up that intense lineal fission and wealth hoarding forever, the male genetic diversity would have just stayed flat at near zero. But it didn't. It eventually bounced back.
The model suggests that human populations likely transitioned into these intense, rigid, segmentary systems right around the dawn of intense agriculture, which caused the rapid bottleneck. But then as time went on, they later relaxed into slightly less rigid kinship systems.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, as societies grew larger and became more politically complex, perhaps forming early states or centralized governments with taxes and standing armies, the extreme, unchecked power of the local patrilineal clan began to fade. The social structures evolved, and the genetics followed suit.
which means human culture is incredibly dynamic, and our DNA is just quietly taking notes in the background the whole time.
Beautifully put.
So what are the next steps for this research? Now that we have this brilliant theoretical model, how do we prove it actually happened this way in specific regions?
Well, the key moving forward is ancient DNA. Future research needs to extract and analyze ancient DNA from specific archaeological sites across multiple continuous time points.
To track it in real time, basically.
Exactly. Because violent conflict and peaceful segmentary dynamics impact genetic diversity at different mathematical rates, we can use ancient DNA as a sort of speedometer.
Oh, wow.
By measuring the exact speed of genetic loss in a specific ancient village over a few centuries, researchers will be able to distinguish whether a local transition was driven by a sudden violent massacre or if it just succumbed to the slow, invisible pressure of wealth inequality.
That is incredible. We can essentially read the speed of the bottleneck in ancient bones to reconstruct the social realities of villages that disappeared millennia ago. We are moving from generalized global theories to high-precision anthropology.
It is a very exciting time for the field, yes.
Okay, let's bring this all together. What is the central insight here that you want people to take away?
The severe, precipitous drop in male genetic diversity 5,000 years ago wasn't necessarily caused by apocalyptic global warfare. Instead, peaceful changes in social structure, specifically wealth-driven differences in family size and clans splitting strictly along paternal lines, are completely sufficient to explain this massive genetic bottleneck.
Violence is neither sufficient nor necessary to explain the missing man of the Neolithic. What does this mean for how we view the true nature of early human societies? We don't have to look at our ancestors as perpetually trapped in a bloody Hobbesian war for survival.
Right, not at all.
Sometimes the most dramatic shifts in our biology are driven by the mundane realities of how we choose to live, how we define our families, and who gets to inherit the herd. And it makes you wonder, if ancient farming practices could leave a permanent, visible scar in our DNA 5,000 years later, what invisible cultural rules are actively shaping the human genome right now?
That is a very profound thought to leave on. Our culture and our biology are always in a dialogue.
This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now stay with us for an original track created especially for this episode and inspired by the article you've just heard about. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science, base by base.
Traced a thread through dust and time, a quiet mark passed down the line. Not every drop was war and flame. Sometimes the rules just change the game. A family branch splits, then splits again. A few names rise, the rest grow thin. Not by the sword, but by the way a lineage learns to hold its place. It's the father's lines that narrow fast, like river paths that can outlast. While mother's footsteps fill the land, the why grows quiet, grain by grain of sand. No battle cry, no smoking gun, just how the living gets it done. In clustered homes, in village rings, one branch blooms while another swings. Into the dark, unnamed, unseen, is written in between. We ran the years on borrowed sons, watched haplotypes come loose undone. Even when fear takes a toll, the long slow pull is social whole. So if the signal looks like pain, smoking gun, just how the living